Yeah, so in this Upanishad, we did the introduction and the Shanti mantras last week. And just to summarize some of the points, we talked about Upanishad, what it is, and how a student has to approach the teacher. And the goal of the Upanishad is Prameya, what is indicated, that is the goal, not who taught the Upanishad to whom, in what year, that is not important. Most important is the subject. And the teachers of the Upanishads had no ego. They did not even want their name there in most of the Upanishads. And we find that the student approaches the teacher with a desire for self-knowledge. And for that, he has to have extreme dispassion. He has already seen the world. He has understood that the world is not going to give me joy. We already talked about all the activities in the world eventually lead to sorrow, lead to dependence, and cause, you know, dissatisfaction. So that he has understood that. And so he does not want any more of that. And that's why he approaches the teacher. And it is in the form of a dialogue. It is always in the form of the dialogue, the Upanishads, between the teacher and the student. And we also find that when there is a question answer, then we are able to relate to the topic better instead of somebody just constantly speaking. So some discussion is good. And what is the quality of the teacher? So Gurudev explains that in his commentary, and we have heard before, that he has to be Shrotriya Brahmanishtha. Shrotriya means he has studied the Upanishads and he is able to teach them. He is able to explain this. Either he has studied from his guru or maybe in his meditation directly, he has heard that. So that is called Shrotriya, not only the ability to understand the Upanishads, but the ability to teach. Like there may be a person who has understood, is a master of Sanskrit, but is not able to teach, is not able to express, then he would not be called Shrotriya. So the teacher has to be Shrotriya. Second quality is Brahmanishtha. He's talking about all these qualities of the Upanishads and all these, the Brahman and so on. But he himself does not have any experience of that. He has not progressed like a university professor, you know, who may be expert in Sanskrit, can translate all the shlokas, give all the commentaries, even give very good talks. But you ask him, have you yourself meditated and acquired this knowledge? He says, no, I have not. So that's what a teacher is. That's what the student is looking for, a teacher who is Shrotriya and Brahmanishtha. And it is with that attitude of humility and surrender, the teacher is approached by the student who prostrates and surrenders himself. Talking about humility, I heard a story recently. There was this Mahatma who lived on the in the outskirts of the capital of the kingdom of one of the kings. He was in his kingdom, but living outside in an ashram, small ashram in the outside the capital. And the king had achieved a lot of power, wealth, success. He had everything he could ask for, but he didn't have that final inner peace. So he said, I'm going to approach this teacher and ask him for self-knowledge. So he goes there and he goes in his chariot and he has a cart full of gold, diamonds, jewelry, all kind of food, you know, all those things. And he says, you know, teacher, I have come for this knowledge. And here are all my offerings. With that, you can build up your ashram and your students can comfortably eat and study for a long time. So I am here requesting self-knowledge. And the rishi says, get out of here. So he says, get out. Nobody has ever talked to him like that. But he leaves, takes all his gold and jewelry back. Then he goes back and thinks about it. And he said, you know what? My approach was not that good, you know. So after a few days, he thinks about it. And then he goes back to the rishi. This time he just goes in a simple cart, not with a chariot, not carrying any gold, wealth, nothing, and just a couple of his soldiers. And he first thing he prostrates to the Rishi, does Sastang Namaskar. And then he says, Maharaj, I know last time I made a mistake, but this time I am ready to offer you half my kingdom and also marry my daughter to you so that I may be equal to you. You know, then only I can ask, because so he says, I offer that. So the Rishi sees the change in his attitude and he says, okay, I don't need your kingdom. I definitely don't need your daughter. But since you have the humility, I will teach you. So that is the attitude one should have, where that I am the seeker of knowledge. And only then the knowledge always flows from higher to lower. Unless you have respect for the guru and unless you have this attitude, knowledge will not happen. So this is the brief introduction. Now we'll do the first shloka. Hansaben, you want to repeat? You cannot. Kene shitam patati preshitam manaha. नहीं उसका तो अनम्यूट है हमारी वॉल्यूम
नहीं नहीं मेरा केनेशितम पतति प्रेषितम मनः
केन प्राणः प्रथम प्रयुक्तः
केन प्राणः प्रथम प्रीति युक्तः
केनेशितां वाचमिमां वदन्ति
केनेशितां वाचमिमां वदन्ति
चक्षुश्रोत्रं कौदेवो युनक्ति
चक्षुश्रोत्रं कौदेवो युनक्ति
या सो हियर द स्टूडेंट आस्क्स द क्वेश्चन इट्स अ वेरी ब्यूटिफुल क्वेश्चन एक्चुअली द क्वेश्चन इटसेल्फ will need some time. In fact, Gurudev has done several pages of commentary just on this question. I would request everybody to read it. I'll cover parts of it so that we can get part of the second mantra also. So Kena, by who? So that's why this Upanishad is called Kena Upanishad, because the first word of the Upanishad is Kena. Like Ishavasya, we talked about Ishavasya Medagam Sarvam. So that is Ishavasya. So Kena Upanishad means, Kena means by whom. Ishitam. Ishitam means willed or ordered or instructed by. And Patati Manaha. Patati Manaha means the mind falls, does not really fall, but mind alights on the objects. And Preshitam means prompted by. So one is where a person directly does it is the karta or is the prompter. So he's asking who is the doer and who is the prompter of the mind alighting on the objects. Doer and prompter example is like I need a glass of water. So either I go and get it myself or I am sitting and then I request somebody else, can you please pour me a glass of water? So one is I myself do it. And one is I request or prompt somebody else to do it. So he says, by whom is the mind propelled or prompted to alight on the objects? Then he says, Kena, and by who this pranaha, pranaha, prathama prana. Prathama prana means the mukhya prana, the main prana. As we had studied in Prashna Upanishad, there are five pranas, but there is a mukhya prana, which is the origin, and from that arise the five pranas, prana, apana, samana, vyana, udana. So the five pranas originate from that mukhya prana. So he says, prathama prana, by who is this prathama prana? Preti means again is proceeds, moves, yuktaha, very well equipped. The prana which is well equipped, by who is the prana going towards the, you know, out into the body to take care of the body. Then he says, Kena Ishitam Vacham Imam Vadanti. So Kena, by whom? Ishitam means ordered or commanded by who? Vacham, this speech, Imam Vadanti. Imam means these people. How do they speak these words? So what is propelling them or commanding them to speak? And then Chakshu Shrotram Kau, and eyes and the ears. Kau Devaha means which Devaha, which divine power. Because as we know, all the sense organs have their Devas. You know, the eyes have the Surya, the ears have space and so on. Earth, nose has earth and so on. So by which Deva are the eyes and the ears propelled or directed towards the sense objects? So he's asking that there is some power, which is the sense organs, the organs of action. Speech represents all the organs of action, the five. Eyes and ears represent the sense organs. Then the prana represents all the five pranas. And the mana represents the antakarana, mana, buddhi, chit, ahankar. So all the functions of the body, whether the sense organs, organs of action, speech, the pranas, all and the subtle functions, who is it that is propelling that? So you say, why do you need to know? Eyes work, eyes can see, ears can hear, mind can think. He says, no. I know that the gross body is inert, because when consciousness is no longer functioning, the eyes and ears are there, but this person can't see. Mind is there, the brain is there, but the person can't think when the body is lying there, when the pranas have gone. And so the body is the gross body, and the mind, intellect, is the subtle body, and they are both inert. They themselves cannot function. They need some other power, and I want to know what is the power. And why does he go to a spiritual teacher? You know, if he wanted to know about eyes or ears, he could have gone to an ophthalmologist or ENT. For the mind, he could have gone to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, or, you know, all that. For the speech, he could have gone to a speech therapist. Why is he going to a spiritual teacher? Because these functions are not intrinsic to the pranas or to the body, but he knows that there is a force that is propelling them from outside or inside, that we will come to that. And then science also says that what are we? We are a combination of substances. So when the elements and they combine in a particular manner, and then all the, you know, protozoa and everything was just created out of combination. And so we are a combination of eyes, ears, and at the right time when all this combination happens, then the human being is created and all these. And they talk about protozoa and all that. Maybe at the first, there was some combination of elements that happened in the water, air, space, fire. So this a combination cannot be. Because think about it, like a car, you combine all the things. You put the carburetor and transformer and wheels and steering and seats and body. Can the car move by itself? No. Car needs a sentient being to sit in the car and drive it. So combination does not make the total. Secondly, the combination is not for the combination, it is for somebody else. Like a car that is combined with all these parts, car is not for the car itself. Car is for the driver. Or like you have a house, and the house has all the parts, you know, bedroom, living room, family room, kitchen, and so on. Now, all the combination is there. The house is built, but the house is not for the house. House is for somebody to live in there. So same way, he understands that these combination of sense organs, organs of action, are not for the body, but for somebody who is occupying the body. And so that's what he says. It could be a karta or a or a prompter. What is preshitam? So either he is a doer, as we said, or there is somebody prompting. Now, where is this karta? Where is this, you know, this karta, this doer, this prompter? Where is he? Is it outside the body or inside the body? He wants to know that. Like if we see a car driving, of course, nowadays you can see car driving without a driver, but a traditional car in San Francisco, you see it a lot. It's so common now, you know, driverless. It's amazing. And it's becoming like very common. Not, I don't see in LA at all that much, but in San Francisco, driverless cars are going. So, but generally, a car to run has to have a sentient driver, or a house again has to have a sentient individual. You may have a fully furnished kitchen, but unless there is a person sitting in the kitchen and cooking, the kitchen is not of any use. So there we say it is inside. But here his question is it outside or is it inside? Is it only inside or is it outside or is it both? So that is the next question. And here the student has studied Drigdrishya Vivek. And so the question is from Drigdrishya Vivek, because in Drigdrishya Vivek, Shankara, he may not have studied, but he has studied those concepts which Shankaracharya ji puts in the in his text, where he says that eyes are seen, I mean the objects are seen, the eyes are the seer. Yeah. Eyes are not affected by the objects. If there is a red flower, my eye doesn't become red, or yellow flower, it doesn't become yellow. Then the eyes are there. Who knows the condition of the eyes? The mind. I know that my eyes are blurry and I need to get cataract, or I need to get glasses or lenses. So the mind knows the condition of the eyes. And the mind does not get really affected. Mind knows, but mind does not get affected by the condition of the eyes. And who knows the mind? The mind is also known to me. So that is the Sakshi, the ultimate seer. And that is not known to anybody else. So that is the ultimate seer, that is Drishta, that is Sakshi. So that's, he wants to know who is this Sakshi, who is the knower, and how do these objects move? You know, how do the eyes function, the hands move, the feet move? What is the source of energy? That he wants to know. Where does this energy for the movement come from? Where is this? Again, it is external. Is it internal? Is it known, unknown? You know, he wants to know that. Very intelligent question. And then he also wants to know, what is my relationship to this? This one that is illumining the sense organs, organs of action, making my pranas, my speech, everything work. What is my relationship to that? That also is covered in this question. So we can see that the student has thought about it, has studied these, all these knowledge, and then has framed the question after. That's why they say that the student has to live with the guru for a while before he's allowed to ask question. He can't just call on the phone and say, oh, guru, I have a question. Or he can't email or text or WhatsApp. He has to come and live with the guru for a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. And then only he's allowed to ask questions. So we see that here the student has spent time with the guru. Then another point that Gurudev makes in his commentary, that the only true guru, there may be an external guru who will teach you this knowledge, but ultimately it is our intellect that talks to the mind. So the real guru is the intellect alone, and that talks to the mind. And why do we not know this? Why do we not pay attention to this? Because our mind is extrovert. We are going outward and our ego is, you know, there, and we have forgotten our true nature. And so the ego is propelling my mind outside. Well, you know, in the Upanishad also says, that the Brahmaji made the sense organs to look outside, tasmat paran pasyati nantaratman. The sense or paranchikhani vyatrinat swayambhu, tasmat paran pasyati nantaratman. So the creator created the sense organs to look outside, and so they only look for solutions outside, they don't look inward. And that's the student's question. And when he says the mind alights on the objects, you know, science always says, well, if there is a flower, I see the flower, and then the image of the flower goes through my cornea and then lands on my retina, and then the retina gets an impression, and then that travels to the optic nerve, to the mind. And that's not true. Our Upanishads say it very clearly, that it is the mind that goes out through the senses to alight on the objects. Like if I see a part, then the mind knows this is part. And so the part image arises in the mind from previous knowledge. If the mind does not know or has never seen it, then the mind may, a person may ask somebody else, what is this object or this animal or this flower? So because sometimes you may be seeing a person, he's walking by, and you don't even pay attention. And he says, you know, I walked by, I even smiled at you, you didn't say anything. I said, because my mind was somewhere else, sorry. So even though I am seeing the object and it is falling on my retina, I do not see it. And it has to be a subtle. It has to be something very subtle, not something that is gross like the sense organ. So the student knows all that. So he approaches the teacher with the conviction that he will get an answer to his question. My question, the teacher will answer and will answer correctly, and he has faith. Talking about asking question, this lady calls this helpline, you know, which answered question. And she says, you know, I have a question. So he says, what? So she says, my husband accidentally swallowed a Tylenol. What should I do? So the man says, give him a headache. You don't want to waste the Tylenol. So hopefully the teacher will give as good an answer as that man gave. So this is the first question where he says, what is it that is impelling the mind, the senses, the speech, and the pranas, everything to function? And what is the deva? Deva here, in the senses, we say the senses are called devas. Okay. It comes from deva, light. So the senses are provide, you know, illumination, in the sense you can see something because of your eyes, because of your ears. So they say there are devas or powers which are behind each sense organ. And so he wants to know, who are those that are? Can you please tell me that, oh Guru? Now we'll go to mantra number two. Hansa Ben, you can do that, please.
Hansa J.
Hansa J. Patel. You can unmute. You can unmute, please. Shrotrasya shrotram manaso mano yat.
Shrotrasya shrotram manaso mano yat.
Vachoha vacham sa upranasya pranaha.
Vachoha vacham sa upranasya pranaha.
Chakshuscha chakshurati mucha dhiraha.
Chakshuscha chakshurati mucha dhiraha.
Retyasma loka damrita bhavanti.
Pretyasma lokad mruta bhavanti.
Can please unmute. I would request everybody to chant this with me. And every week we will chant this second mantra, because this is the entire Upanishad. Actually, if you understand or study this mantra, if you have fully grasped it, the rest of the Upanishad is kind of repeat of this ideas. And that's what one of the commentators said, that for Uttam Adhikari, one who is totally qualified. He has to only understand this mantra, do namaskar to the guru, and he can leave if he has understood. For most, the rest of us, the Madhyama Adhikaris, we need to study all the mantras of the Upanishad. So if anybody is Uttam Adhikari, if they don't come next week, I know that you got it. So we will repeat every week, and I would request everybody to please memorize. Memorize this mantra. This is very important. Shrotrasya shrotram manaso manoyat vachoha vacham sa upranasya pranah chakshuscha chakshurati mucya dhiraha pretyasma lokatamrita bhavanti. So teacher answers, but his answer is very cryptic. It is not clear. And that some of the Western authors criticize, they say, the teacher didn't even answer the question. So we'll see that what is the teacher's answer. So he says, what is this power that is doing it? Shrotrasya shrotram. It is the ear of the ear. Okay. Manaso manaha. It is the mind of the mind. Okay, then yat vachoha vacham, it is the speech of the speech, and sau, and also it is pranasya pranaha. So it is the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech, the prana of the prana, and chakshusha chakshu, it is the eye of the eye. And this, when the dhiraha, dhiraha means the wise person who has understood the truth. Gurudev calls him bravely wise. And dhiraha is covered many times in the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll talk about that. So he says, a dhira muchya, one who has transcended this equipment, who has gone beyond this equipment. And pretya asmat loka. Pretya means having given up the body, asmat loka, from this loka, one who has given up the body, that seeker, amrita bhavanti, those seekers become immortal. So you mean to say that to get this knowledge and become immortal, I have to give up the body and die? Pretya means death. So the teacher's answer is not very clear. He has not told what this is. He said, eye of the eye, ear of the ear, you know, speech of the speech, mind of the mind. He has not told what it is. And then he says that one has to transcend all this, wise person, give up this body, give up this world, this loka, all these worlds, then you become immortal. He said, but you still didn't tell me what it is. So we'll see what the teacher means by this. So as they say, his answer is inappropriate. It is not straight, simple answer. Because why? Because the truth cannot be described in words, can only be indicated. That is the truth of the Upanishads. The truth, you can call it Atman Brahman, cannot be indicated in words or speech. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. Upanishad says speech returns. Speech cannot describe it. Mind cannot know it. Intellect cannot understand it. That is Brahman. That is one you should know. So, and also it is not an object. See, if it was an object, the teacher could show, okay, this is, it's a cow, or it's a book, or it's a scripture, or it is something, or a shivaling, he could show it is that. No, it is not an object to be seen, or even an object for the mind, an object for the intellect. It is not an object for anything. It is the Atma or Brahman. Now, this Atma or Brahman, how can we describe it? So they say in the world, anything you want to describe, there are five things. Guna, Kriya, Sambandha, Jati, Rudhi. So five descriptions of anything that you want to describe. So guna means qualities. So if if I say I saw a flower, he says, what flower? I saw a red flower, that it is this, or a white flower is a lily. So color, or these are the qualities, or it was big, it was small, it was short, it was tall. Those are the qualities. Then kriya, what does it do? So like a person, you can say, well, he's a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer, or object, you can say it's a vacuum cleaner. So that describes the kriya. When you say vacuum cleaner, that means, okay, it is something that moves and with a vacuum cleans the house. So that is kriya. Then sambandha, where I ask somebody, you know, can you please get me that book? Which book? The one that is on the table, not the one on the chair. I want the one on the table. Or do you know so and so? No, I don't know him. You don't know him? Oh, he's son-in-law of that famous guy. Oh, okay, now I understand. Or he's brother-in-law. So that is sambandha. So you know somebody by its relation to another object or to another person. Then jati. Jati means which is a species. Like a dog is different from a cat. Cat is different from a horse. And even in dog, you know, they have different species. Alsatian and, you know, all these different species, Pomeran, all that, these different species are there. So that is called jati. And you say, oh, I don't want to, give me Rudy, give me the name. Okay, you say, okay, call that person. He says, which person? Oh, call Ramesh. Then, okay, you have indicated the name. Then you don't need to say, oh, that person who is wearing a yellow shirt and he's tall and, you know, just give the name. So to describe anything in the world, there are five ways. But for Atma, which is the self, there is no guna. Are there any qualities, color, shape, size? No. Is there any activity, kriya? No, Atma doesn't do anything. In the presence of Atma, this body, mind, intellect functions. Like electricity, electricity itself doesn't do anything, but in the presence of electricity, the light, the heater, you know, the fridge, they all work because of that. So it has no kriya, it has no sambandha, because there is nothing like Atma. Atma alone is. There is no jati, there is no species, because they don't say there is a short Atma and tall Atma or this. No, there is only one Atma and there is nothing else. It is non-dual. There is no other anything else, and it doesn't have a name. You say, well, you gave a name Atma. He said, but the name Atma doesn't tell you anything. You say, well, what is Atma? We say Atma is Brahman. He said, what is Brahman? Brahman is Atma. He said, but you didn't explain what is Atma. It's like somebody asks you, you know, where is the post office? He says, in front of the hospital. He says, where is the hospital? In front of the post office. And then you have it. So same way, you're saying Atma is Brahman and Brahman is Atma is not telling you. There is nothing, even the name Atma doesn't convey anything. You know, like Ramesh, okay, you know, or a blue shirt, you know, or a red flower. But Atma doesn't have any qualities, doesn't convey any image. Like you say, oh, can you visualize Atma or can you visualize Brahman? We can't. So also it cannot be defined. Atma cannot be defined, cannot be explained. And everything in the world, when we deal with it, is I and my. It is me and then my house, my car, my spouse, my child, my, you know, all these things, my job, my profession. But in Atma, there is no I and there is no my. There is no ownership and there is no ego. There is no I. So I and my, again, is not there. So Atma cannot be defined. They say if you define God, you defile God. Because God as form, you can. Okay, Shri Krishna, Shri Rama. But as Brahman, as Atma, you cannot define, because it has none of those qualities. No shape, no color, nothing. And that's why they say this particular shloka is very good to meditate on, because it is my true self, which is the eye of my eye, the ear of my ear, the mind. So it is because of this that all my abilities function. So it is a very good shloka to meditate on. And they say that this Brahman or Atma is Desha Kala Aparichinna. That means it is not limited by space or time. So there was not a time when Atma or Brahman was not there. It is always there, always is, and always will be. Natvevaham jatu nasam natvam neme janaidhipaha. Bhagavan says in the second chapter that there was never a time when you and I and these kings were not there. We are here, and there is never a time when we will cease to be. Yes, this body will cease to be, but our essence, that is our true nature, is always there. So time and then space. They say, is Brahman in under the ocean? Yes. Is Brahman in the furthest space, billions and trillions of miles away, even in the dark, dark hole and all? It is there. Is it in heaven? Yes. Is Brahman in hell? Yes. So in all the 14 worlds, in everywhere, in every cell of the human body, it is there. Every cell of the table, chair, everything, it is there. So that is not limited by space or time. And also Brahman does not have an instrument. Like if I want to cut a vegetable, I use a knife, or I want to cut a paper, I use a scissor. But Brahman has no instruments to do anything. So they say, what is the use of knowing this? He has no quality, no name, no instrument, no action, doesn't do anything, just sits there. What is the use of knowing such a Brahman? What am I going to get out of it? So they say that it is my own self, and that's why one should know that. And the example, and they say, why is we don't perceive Brahman? So they say, because our attention is on objects, on the world, and we do not turn attention to the substratum. Even in my body, I pay attention to my BMI, but not to who I really am. So beautiful example is the movie, which we have seen, heard the example. But on the movie, now if the movie, you go and you pay, say, $20 or $10 to watch the movie, and you go into the theater and there is a white screen, are you going to be happy? No. You say, when is the movie going to start? And then the movie starts and you say, ah, now it is maja aa raha hai na. There is some fighting, there is some romance. And then when the movie ends, do we wait and say, okay, let me watch the white screen? No, we leave and we walk out. So this movie is maya, and the white screen is Brahman. So our attention is only on maya, on nama rupa. Oh, this name, this form, this. So as long as our attention is on nama rupa, it's not going to go on the substratum, the Brahman. So that's why they say knowing this will give us moksha, will give us liberation. Knowing it as my own nature. Without that knowledge, you will be bound. As long as you are thinking it is in objects, your focus is on objects. Also, we had seen 2 weeks ago that all objects lead to sorrow. And only way to get liberated is to give up. That's why he says, ati muchya dhiraha, having transcended this world of objects, having given up nama, rupa, and all that, one who goes beyond that is dhira, is the wise person. They say, no. You know, I have heard that I am that. So why doesn't the teacher tell the shishya, it is you? That's it. And you are that. So he says, the teacher cannot tell us, because when somebody tells me it is you, what is my knowledge about myself? I am this body. And I am smart, I am dumb, I am short, I am tall, I am happy, unhappy, and my heart is weak, my heart is. So all our attention is on pranas or on the senses or on the body or on that. And so our idea of myself is this body. So when he says it is you, then I will say, oh, it is this body. So that means our attention is on conditioning. But they say it is unconditioned consciousness. None of these conditionings apply. So they say, well, what do you mean it is you? Because our knowledge of ourself is I am this conditioning. Then it says, you know, okay, it is consciousness. He says, oh, why don't you say it is consciousness? Because when we hear the word consciousness, again, we don't know what consciousness means. So we say, how will I know that consciousness? How will I understand that consciousness? Can you explain that consciousness to me, Guru? So again, we want to objectify this consciousness that now I don't know, but one day I will come to know what is this consciousness. One day Brahman will appear before me and give me darshan. And I'll say, oh, Brahman, I'm so happy to see you. And Brahman will bless me, tathastu. So we have this idea of Brahman as an object or as... So that also is not, you know, is not. So it is different from all the objects, all the senses. And again, the electricity example. So in the electricity, if somebody is... you know, electricity illumines the bulb, illumines the mic, microphone. So you can say, what is electricity? Bulbasya bulbam, micasya micam. You know, that's a shrotrasya shrotram. So that is electricity. It is the mic of the mic. It is the bulb of the bulb. It is the illumining power. And it is that which is giving abilities to the body, mind, and intellect. So all my abilities are because of this presence. And it is distinct from all of these. They say, okay, then is it shunya? You know, we had talked about shunya. Shunya, as the Buddhists talk about, is absence. There is nothing. So Brahman is not shunya. Brahman is not absence. Brahman is. It is the isness and everything. That's why they say sat, chit, anand, existence, consciousness, and bliss. And how do we get to that? They say by detaching. As long as you are excessively attached to the BMI, to these objects, you will not get it. So we have to detach. That's why he says, ati muchya dhiraha, a wise person who is detached from these. And that's why they say Atma is asanga. Atma is unattached. Atma is not attached. So that's why he says, hanyati hanyamane sharire. Bhagavan says in second chapter that the body may perish, may be killed, but the Atma is not. So everything that is in the universe is illumined by this consciousness. And the prompter we will listen to only if we have given a status, like my parents. Okay, my father tells me or my mother tells me something. I will listen. Why? Because I respect them, status, or my teacher or my guru. So that's what they say, that prompter is somebody who has been given this status, and then only we will listen. We will stop here. The dhira and the immortality we will do next week, because that is another full topic. So we have about 10 minutes. I've covered quite a bit of material. So if anybody has any questions, would like to add anything, please feel free to do that.
I had a question.
Yeah.
You touched on the idea of time and space. How would that look? Can you say what is the time of the time or the space of the space?
No, it is beyond time and space. It is not limited by time and space. Aparichinna desha kala aparichinna means the time and space are basically inert. Right? And time,
yeah.
How did time start? So Gurudev has said beautifully that we say, what is time measured in seconds, right? Measured in seconds. So what is time? When one thought is there, then time is not there. When a second thought arises, that's when time arises. So Brahman was there before even time, before any thoughts, because thoughts came only when the jivas were created. So it is beyond time and it is also beyond space. It extends way beyond space. That's why Purush Suktam says, Tripad Urdhva Udayit Purushah Pado Eva Abhavat Puna. So three parts of the Brahman is outside. Only a quarter of Brahman has become this 14 worlds and this space. So three parts of it is even beyond space. So it is beyond time, it is beyond space. It is before time and before space. Space and time are created.
They also limit too.
And they are also limited. And space and time are inert, they are limited, and they are created. So there has to be a creator.
Subtler than space.
Yeah, it's subtler than space.
Space
subtler
limit,
than
or space came out of it.
Right. That's why they say, no, first came space and then air, then fire, water, earth. Tattva Bodh talks about that. Tattva Bodh.
So,
I think you have
you
done
explain
it in the
also the how the gross and the subtle, what's the difference between gross can never cover the subtle, or can never know the subtle.
Right. Gross cannot know the subtle, like the body cannot know the mind. Mind can know the body, but the body, my hand cannot know my mind, but the mind can know that Drig Drishya Vivek. So the Atma, the consciousness, is subtler than all those, even the mind, the intellect, pranas, it's subtler than all of that.
Subtle,
so it, it's also more pervasive. Yeah, subtler means it's all pervading. Mind has a limited ability, intellect has a limited ability, pranas all have limited ability, but this is unlimited. That's why they say desh kala aparichinna, is not limited by space or time. Any other question anybody has or comments?
I think another point that Gurudev has said in the book commentary about Guru to a Vedanta student, the, you know, Guru is like Brahma, you know, because it is within, like you said in your lecture, for a Shiva Bhakta, Shivlinga is the Shiva. The same way to a Vedantic student, Vedanta student is the Guru within you, which is
right.
Yeah, which is Brahman and all knowing.
Right, right. The intellect, the knowledge, intellect which has jnanam. Yeah,
so
Kusum, anything else you would like to add?
No, I just want to add is a beautiful story at the end of this second sloka by Gurudev. Beautiful story, and the significance of that, he says that Vedanta says that this real bliss within ourselves is just under our nose. If you read the story, it's a beautiful story. And then he gives this, and he says, our ignorance is there of the object, and we are looking everything in the object. That's why it's so near, yet you miss it. So the last paragraph is a story, beautifully done.
Right.
And then I have one request, though, for all of us, that we should watch Upanishad Ganga, episode number 31, and that is the consciousness and the life principle. And this whole Upanishad we'll understand like in half an hour. So when you talk to us, it'll become so interesting and inspiring. It says everything about the consciousness and how it is, how cannot be described. And this third chapter in this book is just the slokas of that story. And the fourth chapter is the slokas explained, the stories explained. And this whole thing is in half an hour, really contributes in half an hour, Upanishad Ganga, episode number 31. So I request all of us to see it before next time. It really makes it so inspiring. I've already watched it, so I'm just saying that to share with all of you.
Yeah, the story we will be covering in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that story is beautifully elucidated in that 31st.
Yeah, we still have other things to cover before we come to the story.
Yeah, but the Brahman it explains, because second chapter is Brahman is incomprehensible. So it explains that also. So whole thing is covered if you see it in this half an hour. So it will become so interesting when you're talking to us, because we already like have a little bit vision. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Jerry, you have more question?
Well, I did have one on that second sentence, Shloka. I was wondering, in that second line, it says after vacham, it says sa u. What's
That
that
alone,
u?
that the so that alone is that u. U means that indeed is the very same one. So means that he.
But what does the u mean?
Means it is the very same one.
Is it short
indeed
for something, or is it a pronoun, or a?
It is u. That is it. It is that same alone. Like he, you know, a lot of there are short words. He, like he means indeed. So this is like a different way of saying indeed. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Anybody has
Thank
any
you.
Questions, comments? Ansa, you have anything?
Maybe avyaya, I don't know.
Huh?
Maybe avyaya, like indeclinable.
Like an avyaya. It is like he and u. These are all avyayas, which are like expressions like oh, you know, oh, or certainly, you know, they use those like that. So, avyaya. Ansa, you have any question, comments?
No, no.
Okay.
I have to read more, I think.
Yeah, actually, Gurudev has given a very long introduction. These first two chapters, his commentary is so long. I
read the introduction, part of it.
Right, right. But I kind of summarized because otherwise, you know,
yeah,
it won't, it'll never end. And also, you all have to yourself, that will help.
It's that we have to come to that stage where we can question ourselves, who
right.
Am I, why am I'm here, and what's the purpose.
Thank you.
You start thinking on it then,
right,
every moment of your life, actually, not just one question and okay, I'm going to go and see a movie now.
True. Thank you, Lata.
Even if you watch movie, you want to say why you do that.
Yeah, Dheera, why does he describe the bravely wise? I mean,
yeah, I don't know why he has used the word bravely, but Dheera is used in many places. Dhi means
right.
Dheera means one who has buddhiman, buddhi. Bravely here means that one who is willing to go beyond the confines, you know, like outside the box, willing to think outside the box, willing to go outside traditional thinking. For that, it requires courage. You know, everybody has been thinking a particular way, and then somebody else comes and gives something totally different, then that person is wise and bravely wise. You know, you know, Newton, what do you call it? Apple was always falling, but he said, why did the apple fall? He said, why are you worried about apple? Just go ahead and eat the apple. Why are you asking? He used to go around asking everybody, why did the apple fall? Why did... So that is called brave. When he questions why it is like that. And whole Upanishad, they say only the people who are wise, and next week we'll talk a little bit about who is the Dheera. Bhagwan has mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Dheera comes several times in different chapters.
Yes.
So,
isn't it a wisdom kind of, but it's a wisdom, but one, the wisdom they can think out of the box,
right,
to see the wisdom in the circumstances which common people may not see,
right,
or you can say thinking out of the box. So when you have one incident happening, out of that, what is the main thing or main substance is seen by the dhiras. Seen by a wise person who looks at the whole picture in a different way than mine or hers, thing like that.
Thank you. We'll end here. It's
thank you.
Time. And then next week, I'll just summarize the first and second shloka in brief, and then cover Dheera and what is Amritam, immortality, and then we'll go to the further shlokas. Of this Upanishad, further mantras, not shlokas, mantras. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.